Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
On today's episode of Worker Movement, we're going to talk about whether you should go outside and potentially risk contaminating everybody with COVID, or whether you should stay inside or ensure that every business fails.
All right. We're going to try a little bit different on this episode. We're going to just try to go back and forth and sort of have a little fun with this one. So let's talk about what's going on with COVID and why it's such a big deal. And it's because we have a disease now that is unlike sort of other devastating catastrophes. This one is not regional, right? It's worldwide, and every region can be affected by it. It's spread through what humans do most, which is talk to one another in close contact. Right, so it's not really waterborne. It's not really airborne, except for it is, but it doesn't hang out on surfaces. It's a very volatile, you know, RNA-based virus, which means that in UV and other things, it's very fragile outside of the human body. So it takes a host. But it's also very devastating, right, to a small group of people, potentially. Right, we don't know everything yet, but it could be also very devastating. And the question then is, do we go out and risk everybody getting sick and fighting through this? Or do we let the businesses die? Because we know that 70% of the businesses in the United States, at least, are service industry.
So each scenario results in a pretty much a terrible outcome, where one leads to the complete eradication of humanity and the other one leads to nobody having jobs, which leads to everybody dying too at some level. So if we look at this as kind of the human, you know, race is attempting to survive, what's the optimal kind of game theory strategy?
Yeah, we're trying to minimize max losses right now. And there's a problem with this, because under capitalism, and it's a little bit of theory here, the person is only, you know, worth as much as they can produce. And so
it's like a playing card where, like, you flip it over and you're like, I'm worth 2, you know, building points or something.
Yeah, it's like the game of life where you are, you know, rolling or spinning that little thing, that little disc thing, and then you've got to choose your job and profession. And if you chose something, or were not actually able to choose anything because your path was already laid out for you based on socioeconomic issues, then you're going to be in the service industry right now in an underpaid job in which you fought for a while to survive. And you're seeing a ton of protests kick up because we're looking at people who have relied on exploiting the worker and exploiting the working class with cheap labor. And you're seeing this in Mitch McConnell's, you know, push for no more a bonus for the unemployed to get them back to work, which then begs the question, is it better to send everybody back to work or better to stay home?
Again, neither of these are good choices. So if we were to apply just a very stringent strategy to, like you said, the game of life, I don't believe, and I'm not well versed in the game of life's rule book, so maybe I have to go read it more thoroughly. But the Mattel game or the Milton Bradley game or whatever has a very finite set of rules, and it applies equally to all players. But our lovely governmental system called capitalism effectively favors the rich, so they get to play by a different set of rules. So if you think about how might this game be played if one set of players had different rules and another set of players got to just kind of do whatever the hell they wanted, would the game number one be as much fun? Because apparently we're optimizing funness at this point.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to go to the game aisle and buy the COVID simulation game, I don't think, because I think everybody loses and that's no fun.
Yeah, it's like playing that new Oregon Trail card game where you can't get past.
Apparently our goal this episode is to make editing as hard as possible.
What the hell happened, dude?
So you broke off at, it's like the Oregon Trail card game.
Yeah, but you thought you'd keep playing it. You thought it'd be fun. Did you hit the stop button?
No, it just died.
Neither did I. I wonder.
I have no idea what happened.
My network died or something. Can you, that's weird. All right, let's try again. So I think I was saying something like, it's like playing the Oregon Trail game again because you thought it'd be fun, right? That's what I said?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, let me try again. Beep! It's like playing the Oregon Trail game again because you thought it'd be fun. But in the end, you just keep losing. And this is sort of what capitalism is every time we have a recession and downfall, we think that we can do it again. We think that the methods that we used in the past are going to help us. And we saw this during the Great Depression. We saw this during the Great Recession, in which they use this devastating portion to basically control the worker and cut away rights. And so without getting too heavy into sort of the political part of it, which may be a part of another episode, the idea of the game theory then asks, for an individual, what's better? And so honestly, for individual, it's probably better to stay home only if you had five. And so this is where the game theory begins to split. And this is where the set of rules becomes a little bit complicated. Because for the wealthy who have savings or have 401ks they could dip into, which is nice than let you pull out your retirement to survive, you don't have to worry as much about survival. But for those that live paycheck to paycheck and have less than 1 month's worth of salary in the bank account, do you qualify for state assistance? Probably not. Do you qualify
for... Or can you get state assistance in a reasonably meaning amount of time so that your kid doesn't starve, or you have health insurance at a very basic level of something catastrophic, like kind of beyond COVID?
That's right. It's because...
cancer is still a thing right now.
Yeah. Yeah, there's still a lot of other things we have to do. And so I'm going to argue that there's no clearness here in this thing. And it makes me kind of frustrated because normally I do game theory. We can start doing like a sort of a deep dive and we can start figuring out. So we should just pop up a scenario, right? If you are a wealthy business owner right now, you want everybody back to work as fast as you can because you're expecting that you're going to have people patronizing you, bringing in the money, and your business will be back to normal in some amount of time. But for the majority of us that either don't have a job now or are underutilized or are relying on gig economy jobs like the shopping apps, right? Going back to work exposes you now to disease. And you have to decide, am I going to be an economic hostage and have to go back to work or be an economic hostage and stay at home? Because you really don't have a choice. It's between survival and getting sick.
And if this sort of decision is applied at a national level where a large segment of the population makes one choice and a large segment of the population makes the other choice, there's a little bit of balance in that one group will eventually sort of outlast the other. And I think that's kind of intentional on the part of the kind of the ruling class, where it doesn't really matter what an individual makes. It's what collectively the larger population makes, because at the end of the day, if some people are going to choose, you know, column A and the others are going to choose column B. And so long as not everybody chooses the stay home column, the ruling class will continue to exploit labor.
And they will continue to pass laws that give them more freedom. So, you know, getting rid of environmental regulations during this period of time, not having OSHA inspections because of risk of leading infections, right? So you're not getting your safety audits, not enforcing mask laws. So you say that shops must have masks, but then you walk around and not everybody has a mask on. No other medical violations. You're not doing hospital checks. You're not doing nursing home checks. So you're letting a lot of the provisions that are in place to help the worker and the regular population are being slid under because of it. And so we're going to have a bunch of workers going back to place that are not only fighting against COVID, but also fighting against workplace violations, because who are you going to report it to and how are you actually going to hold somebody accountable? Because it's the accountability part that actually drives the safety. And so if I'm a worker, the question is why am I working to put money in someone else's pocket when I'm being paid minimum wage? And this is the fundamental issue with this question, because we should have a different economic system, one that rewards the worker, not the landowner. And this is where this podcast is all about, sort of leftist and Marxist theory. But the other part of it is, if we're not going to get that far, we should at least have safe havens, or at least safety nets in place that allow the worker to be safe. And this is what I think Bernie Sanders tried to push with his an extra $600 a week stay at home, basically unemployment, which was to fund families enough, barely enough, just enough to go hungry, but not die immediately, just enough that they can stay home for long enough to fight COVID.
Yeah. And it arguably wasn't large enough of a payment, but it was sort of the best politically possible, given the generally totally screwed up nature of our political parties. And you had certain individuals complaining that, oh, well, we would create this incentive to have people stay home. And it's like, yeah, that's medically what's required. If the solution to a medical crisis actually results in a higher death rate because the economic system like imperils people, you should probably choose a different economic system. But we seem much more committed to, well, we're just going to ignore the medical scenario because fewer people will plausibly be impacted if we just go back to our really, really shitty economic system that guarantees that X number of people die.
Yep.
That's not a fun game of Monopoly to play.
No, and you in the other the other game of Monopoly we have here too is self-selection. So the individuals who are going to go out in the population, and you saw this in Missouri where someone infected like 92 people or some big number of 90 people in 8 days they were open because they were working while they were sick. So economically, if you are forced to work but you don't have the safeguards to stay at home, like you don't have paid sick time, then you are actually incentivized to work while sick. Meaning you're now increasing the likelihood that the people that are going to the place are going to get sick. Now, what we've seen in the media and what we've seen everywhere else is that individuals who are bucking the stay-at-home orders tend to be conservatives or tend to be this libertarian mindset that the government's not going to tell you what to do. It's freedom of choice in their body. Let them get sick. But then they go out and they use the infrastructure and the medical costs that go with it. Which is just really just astounding to me, because it's kind of just bonkers the sort of the hubris that they have. Like I'm untouchable, but then now that I'm untouchable and I hate government expenditures, I have to go to the hospital and they better pay for it. It's just a wild ride for me.
So everybody should fill out a contract that says, I do not believe that COVID is a thing and I will not utilize hospital resources.
Yes, they should have to have a social contract. Once you do that, free to go mask free all you want to. Because, there's all these people that use these arguments that you should get, like you can't give up your freedom and you're never going to be free if you do that. But I'm going to argue that if you're an economic hostage, you're never free. If you're forced.
Yeah, you're not free to begin with. It's a false choice.
False choice. Yeah. The only people that are already free or freer or already free, whose parents had money, right, who already had a small business, quote unquote small business, where they're banking, $200,000 a year by exploiting labor.
They check the box correctly on the being born form. Yep. To say be born rich.
Exactly. Yeah, my family will take care of me. Don't you worry. Right. I look what I did. Right. Why can't you do this too? Because as if people choose to be poor.
They purchase the bootstrap upgrade.
Yeah. Look, I can lift myself up my bootstraps. Yeah, like back to the game of life scenario, right? Like the game, like when you roll, you don't try to pick the lowest income when you play that game, right? You don't try to lose money gambling all the time. But people have vices and people don't have good choices sometimes because that's how the world works. It's our job.
Is there a gambling component in the game of life where like you land on the casino thing and you go in there and you're like, I'm going to play blackjack until my family has no money? Is that a card you can draw or icon on the little disc wheel spinny thing?
I think there's like a loss and I think there's a win. I think you can win the lottery too, get some money.
Yeah, there's definitely, okay.
And you can like buy a lot of land that has oil in it or something weird too, right?
So the correct strategy in that game is to win the lottery.
That's the correct strategy in all life, because if, to go in a little bit more, you know, societal, you know, or cultural impacts, right? If you take a look at the desperation that goes along with the idea that you need to play a lottery to win, it shows you that there is no pathway to become rich beyond luck, pure luck, getting struck by lightning type of luck. And that's because the system has been designed to make sure that those that have money will stay with the money. It's not designed to spread around to the workers. It's not designed to give the worker what they deserve.
And the existence of the lottery is just kind of gives false hope, because you're statistically better off not playing the lottery and just hoping that you find a winning ticket.
That's the better approach, right? It's just like, how many people have walked by the red car in the parking lot someplace and it says $50 a ticket to enter the drawing, right? If you've seen that, then... And you thought to yourself, why the hell am I going to pay $50 to win a car? It's the same idea of the lottery, only what the lottery has done right is they priced it within the price point of individuals who have cash in their pocket or have change left over or have small amounts of money they're going to try to get rich on. So they extract from you more tax. A higher percentage of your wealth goes back to the state when you play the lottery. And that's
so they've made it marginally more accessible to the everyday modern working class poor person.
And what they've done too is, because it funds the schools or whatever it funds in your state, right, funds the parks, right, it funds more lottery winnings, whatever it funds, it goes in the general fund, whatever it happens to be, they don't have to tax as much to the wealthy, so it's a tax diversion. So because you play the lottery, you end up helping the rich stay richer, because they can just say, oh, we don't have to pay more taxes, because why? We have all this lottery money coming in.
So it creates a rationalization to kind of participate in the lottery of, oh, I could win a bunch of money. And if I lose, I'm, you know, helping, you know, pay upkeep for parks or something.
Right. Yes. And that park money is going to help everybody else. Right. And so there's a nature. But the problem is, again, it's going to the back of the worker, not the back of the rich. And the same thing at the back of this COVID-19, the worker should be taken care of, not the 1%. Not even the 0.1% is what I should say, right? The small business owner, quote unquote, is not a small business owner if they own, like, you know, a franchise of Suburbans or Suburban dealers or whatever you want to call them, car dealerships, right? Of Cadillacs or Lincoln, whatever the hell the car brands are. I don't follow that too much.
You don't know anymore?
I don't know. my brain just shut down. But, you know, if they own, you know, 35 McDonald's or KFC's in your area, right? If they have, like, you know, the largest carpet emporium in the state, or they're making, you know, they got a crew of 20 people building houses, like, those are not small business owners. And so to say that's insane. They make a lot of money, and then they exploit the system by saying, we need cheaper labor because I need to make more money, which is just wildly insane.
We are going to have the carpet lobby come after
us. I hope they come after us. Because I am sponsored. We are sponsored by the Hardwood Floor Coalition. So,
the other renewable flooring resource, I guess.
The only renewable, the bamboo
trees grow or something.
Yeah, I just use dirt. So, so I guess in the end, you're screwed either way. There is no good choice here. This is trying to minimize. It's called a minimax. You're trying to minimize maximum loss here. And so what you're trying to do, and this is never great, is deciding, do I vote for a rapist this year or vote for a rapist, right? Or do I go out and work and make money because I have to, or do I stay home and take care of my family? And a lot of times that clear choice is you go out and you have to work to take care of your family, and you have to isolate yourself from your family, which means the people you're taking care of can no longer be part of your circle. And because of that,
which leads to a weird social distancing construct where you are separated from the people that you're actually working to help.
Right. Because do you want to be the one that brings it home? You know, and there's a weird social aspect too, because if you're one of those companies that are business or businesses that are open, If you're one of those bosses who spend their time, you know, like, you know, waving the Blue Lives Matter flags and saying the government's not going to tell him what to do and you don't have to wear masks in my store, and they expose you to it, what are you going to do, wear a mask and get fired? Do you stand up someone not wearing a mask? And what authority do you have to stop them from coming into a store you don't own? So now you have no control. And you had no control in the first place because you were a worker who was being paid by somebody else. You have no control. And this is one of those super stressful moments for everybody.
But you shouldn't be playing the lottery.
No.
That's the only proactive decision that you can make.
Stop playing the lottery. Yes.
Not playing the lottery or raffles or scratch-offs or any accumulation of instant wealth. Like, don't go to the casino. Not that casinos are open or anything anymore, I would think, but who knows?
Yeah, find yourself another dopamine hit. You know, those small wins, just so everybody's aware and knows, like, just like checking your Facebook likes or your TikTok likes or your Instagram, whatever that people are into, checking if people listen to the podcast. Those small amounts of dopamine are addictive, right? And that's where you get off on scratch tickets. So don't do that. Like, find different, you know, drug of choice at this point.
And have it be not TikTok, too.
Yeah, do not be a glassy-eyed psychopath on TikTok. I mean, you can be. It's your life, what you want.
No scratch-offs and no TikTok. So we're going to have the carpet lobby and the TikTok
and,
lobby.
And the state whatever. Lobby going after us. Yeah.
Do they have any money, though?
They have the state behind
them, yes. Don't they spend all their money on advertising too?
I mean, that's just such a waste. I mean, it's such a transfer of wealth. God, I could talk for days. It's such a transfer of wealth for the state to give money to a preferred advertiser because it's all private, right? So they give it to the billboard ads, the TV ads, and so they take the lottery money that should go to the states to advertise or to the state funding and advertise it and waste it back out because marketing and advertisement is literally a transfer of wealth to the whoever owns that company. Without any real work being done.
So there's a non-zero likelihood that the proceeds from lottery or whatever the state's lottery system is, whether it's scratch-offs or Powerball or Mega Millions or whatever it is, goes into some state's general fund that is used for advertising.
Yep.
And that advertising covers perhaps general public well-being, like stay-at-home advertising. So because people are, I haven't looked into this, probably aren't playing the lottery at as high of a rate as they used to. The state doesn't have money to do advertising-like activities to tell people to stay home to be safe. So even our basic like outreach the state is doing is not as solvent as it should be because people can't go out and spend the money to replenish the pool that is needed to do advertising to tell people not to go outside.
And it's another downward spiral too, because if you're not getting your quarterly estimated taxes from the businesses, right, that you're supposed to be at, then the coffers in the state go down, right? The money yep. machine stops going burr. And so now you have to start cutting resources, the same resources that are needed. So the unemployment login stuff doesn't get taken care of. Right? Your WIC and your food stamps don't get replenished on time. Your road construction gets halted. Your parks don't get cleaned up, right? Your trash gets delayed or whatever it happens to be, right? And then if you have those same delays, you have people who can't pay their taxes on their houses right now. And summer taxes are coming up in some areas. I'm not sure if it's quarterly or half a year, whatever it happens to be. But taxes start coming up soon. And how are you going to pay that if you're already behind on your mortgage? Right. And then now we've lost the state level. We've lost the county level because the states and the counties don't have the ability to issue their own currency. That's relied on the federal government level. So then we're reliant on.
Wait, what? Who has the power to issue their own currency?
The Treasury.
So the states do not
have the ability to issue
their currency. Correct. Right?
And some states don't even have a constitutional right to take out debt.
Right, which is most states, which is why it's an actual problem because the lottery is not there to replenish state funds used for, the lottery and a bunch of other things.
Yep. And if you can't take out debt, then you have no ability to balance your budget if you're going negative.
Yep. And so a lot of states are marching towards this. We are functionally insolvent because we don't have the type of proceeds we were expecting from a wide range of public activities.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Park passes are getting cut off. It's going to be pretty rough coming in the second wave. When the second wave comes in September, it's going to be tough again.
Is that a prediction or a statement of fact?
You have it on record that this person said that in September, when schools start back up and businesses start roaring again, and tourism sort of gets kicked off in August and everybody's moving around using their last little bit of vacation, that you're going to start seeing the COVID-19 spike again.
So will it be a second wave in the context of people will be getting sicker at greater rates, or will it be a second wave in the context of there will be greater economic hardship as a result of sort of these ramifications of the first
wave? I think it's going to be both. I think you're going to see insanity, I like that word, coming through, and people are going to spike again and be sick. Fear is going to kick in again because it is a fearful act to be sick and almost dying and spreading it. And you're going to see the economic sort of growth into Christmas slow again. We're already losing retailers left and right. Pier 1's dropping. JCPenney's probably going to drop. There's a bunch of other people that are going to drop off. Real brick and mortar that are real jobs for our real workers are going to drop off, and there's no safety net for them. And so all the buying power, and again, I hate capitalism, but it is the material conditions for us. We have to participate. When we start coming into September, October, when tourism's over and hurricane season kicks into the south, we're going to start seeing, hardships again in the economically.
So because consumer demand is ultimately what's driving the economic issues currently, there's really no horizon in which that suddenly abates and people just suddenly start spending more money that they don't have because they're unemployed.
Yeah, it's a demand issue, right? It's how does a worker who has no job suddenly get more money if their credit cards are already tapped and banks are already insolvent?
Or perhaps not insolvent, but they are not incentivized to provide credit to people that are unemployed.
Yes, that is.
Or businesses that have no ability to create profits, or even just marginally stay solvent in that they're paying their rent every quarter.
There's going to be a lot of people issuing really bad bonds and junk soon. And we're going to lead up into a time in which these same companies are going to take on debt loads that they can't handle. And the question will be that will the Fed in a year have to buy back more bad debt and start hyperinflation going, or are they going to let some of these banks under capitalism, or some of these businesses under capitalism, fall?
And again, either one of those scenarios is real bad for the worker.
The worker gets screwed again, no matter what happens, because they're not going to be there to bail out the worker. You're going to be, if you don't own your house outright, you just have to pay your taxes on the house. I don't know how you're going to survive when you lose your job and people are out of work. I mean, you're looking, you saw that the CNN thing today or yesterday that said the list of the top states, and you see something like Nevada and Michigan are like at 17% unemployment, and that's a U3 unemployment, which means those are people who are actively out of work. Where if you take a look at the U6, and I didn't grab those numbers and I should have, you're talking even higher. You're talking 20-25% unemployment rate, sometimes double that, right? You're at 30% underemployed. In the U6,
are you implying that we didn't do the requisite amount of research in order to complete this episode?
Yes, this is an awesome episode because this is us trying a new format, because like any good weirdos on the left, we're going to take many different paths to get where we got to get to.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.